Dummy. All these good jokes, and now you start recording?
Now I start recording, right.
People will just never know our hilarity.
They'll never know. They will never know how tragically
unfunny funny we are.
See, I was giving us a compliment, and you got to take it away. You got to take it away. See how you are?
Our show in a nutshell.
Right. Okay, so we going? It's Tuesday. We're going to go. I'm just going to go.
Do it.
Jesus, I'm just, what am I waiting for? I'm not getting any younger, clearly. Tuesday, the 10th of October. It is episode 285. 285.
Mm.
See, if you add those together, what do you get? 15. Is that significant in any way?
It's no. When it's what happens when you add 2, 8, and 5 together.
Right. All right. So there you go. Today's episode brought to you by the number 15.
It could also be 80. What happens. 2 × 8 × 5. Anyway, go ahead.
Wait, what is that? 8 × 2? Okay, 16 80? Times. Is that 80?
Yeah, because 2 × 5 would be 10 × 8. It's a faster way to get there, right?
Oh, yeah. Look at that, 80. So,
what is that order of operations crap getting in our heads?
Look at that. All right, so it's on taking pictures, on talking maths. I like how they do that in the UK, maths.
Yeah,
they
put
the S on the end.
Yeah. I don't know. You actually like that? See, sometimes I can't tell if that's just them being, you know, British.
No, I kind of like it. Maths. But okay. is it physics and sciences, or is it just maths?
Well, that's the thing. I think maybe sciences. I don't think it's physics.
Why is math
plural
over there? That is. I think it's because there
are multiple maths. There's algebra and there's geometry and whatever. In the same way, it's sciences, but it's physics.
Yeah,
chemistry,
but you wouldn't say
whatever.
Literatures.
Yeah, because there's only one literature. No, I'm just kidding. sciences are different.
We've been wrong all this time.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I like it. The maths. Kind of cool. Anyway, on taking pictures, Bill Wadman back in Brooklyn, early morning, Jeffrey in Silver Spring. So you got back at 4 a.m., 3 a.m., whatever?
Yeah.
What did you get back?
I walked in the door at 3:15, and then I had to edit my picture from yesterday. So I was up till like 3:45 and went to bed and woke up a couple hours ago. So I'm here on like 4 hours sleep. So if I'm a little tired, you know.
On bleary-eyed pictures, on
pretty much,
on
yeah.
taking,
yeah, yeah,
tear-filled pictures.
Yeah, and didn't get a hold that much sleep this weekend, so I'm kind of exhausted. I could probably sleep for a day and a half right now, but I'm all right.
A day and a half.
Got to catch
Don't
up.
Don't do it, man. Don't do it.
Got too much stuff to do. People to see, places to go.
Right. New work, hustle, as my friend Jeff Newton likes to say. Hashtag exactly. New work, hustle.
Is that like the what is the movie Something Hustle?
American Hustle?
Nah, I guess maybe.
Was that Terrence Howard? Is that who's in that?
Yeah, maybe. Got home last night, had a good weekend. It was fun.
Good.
Got to good. Hang out with a bunch of amazing people. Saw a bunch of amazing talks. Did we use Eugene Richards as our photographer of the week before?
Oh man, I don't know. We'd have to look.
You know that guy? Documentary photographer? I'm sitting there watching his talk, and he's showing these videos of him, you know, some old guy, Jeffrey, who grew up on a farm and went to World War II, and his wife died. He's all alone, and now he's in a home, and all he ever wants to do is go back to his farm, but he knows he'll never get back there, and he's, like, crying, and I'm just I'm like, oh, my God, like, what? You know, there's certain people who make work that just makes me want to slip my wrists.
Don't
there's
do
no
that.
Point. Give me a knife. Yeah. You know, but it's absolutely lovely. So you can't like disregard it from an aesthetic level because it's gorgeous right. and you know human condition and all that. But like, oh, you know, man, photojournalists can get a little down sometimes.
Yeah, we should put this in for next week. This is great stuff.
Oh, the guy was incredible. He's won pretty much every photojournalism award ever created, plus a whole bunch of others that they made up just for him.
We should make one up just for him.
The On Taking Pictures Photojournalism Really Depressing Award goes to...
Wow. That's not a way to get him to show up for the dinner. Come on now.
what I was going to say before we started, we were saying... I'm not going to go into the details, but you were just saying like, you know, you can't always think about monetary stuff before you think about what you're going to do or something along that line.
Right. Yeah. You can't always just go, well, I need to, you know, how am I going to make money from this?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that, yeah. I mean, there are certain things that you can do that, but oftentimes the money has to be the byproduct of the action.
Yeah. 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 And, so the, Greg Heisler was up there yesterday speaking, and I've seen him give his, you know, talk before where he goes through the, is it 25 portraits? What are 50 portraits?
50 or whatever. Portraits. Yeah, sure.
Where he goes kind of through the book and just talks about them. And it's, you know, it's a great talk and it's fun and his work is amazing. And, you know, so that's kind of what I was expecting, is sort of a rehash of that talk. And he got up there and he just sort of didn't even show, I think he showed like four images. They just like rotated behind him, but like, it wasn't about the pictures. It was about him giving advice essentially. And one of the things that he said that somebody said to him many, many years ago, he was sitting down with some, you know, somebody was doing a portfolio review of him or something. And, you know, the guy's like, well, you know, this work is good. This is like when he was younger. This work is really good, you know, but you should really just shoot what you can't help but shoot. And
because it's kind of the play on the shoot what you love.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. He's just like, 'cause then you're going to do better. You're going to take better pictures of that and people are going to notice, and then they're going to hire you to shoot that. And it's going to be the self-perpetuating thing. And then he kind of got into this whole thing. He's just like, you know, people talk about style and brand and all this stuff. And he's just like, none of that is something you plan to do. That's all stuff in hindsight. Like, all you can ever think about is the next picture. He's like, you're building a house brick by brick. Think about the bricks. Don't think about the house. Mm-hmm. And you know, he gave it like all this sort of, you know, very sort of Zen advice that's a little bit obvious, but also kind of nice to hear from somebody who is, you know, a heavy.
Well, and he's got the benefit of
hindsight,
30 years of yeah, you know, making pictures.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He also said that one time he went to some sort of workshop-y thing like that. And there was a they brought up some New York advertising guy who in the 70s was, you know, shooting all of the ads, you know, like that kind of guy, you know, like big commercial guy. He's like, you know, you would never know his name, but he was like the guy at the time. And the guy walks in, gives his talk, and at the end they do a Q&A, and somebody stands up and asks the typical question, Jeffrey, if you were to give advice to somebody just starting out in the business, you know, one of those kinds of questions.
Right, sure.
And apparently the guy looked and said, I wouldn't go into photojournalism or photography. Photography's dead. There's no money in it anymore. You know, like basically the same
thing, arguments that are
being
on.
Made now. Right. And this was 30 years ago or 40 years ago. He also talked about, you know, pulling all nighters. He's like, you know, I started working on my thing for this talk and I was going through it and I was going to do my normal thing with like slightly modified. He goes, and I ended up just rewriting this whole thing last night. And I kind of pulled an all nighter. He says, you know, a lot of my friends say to me, like, what the hell are you doing up in the middle of the night? Like, I haven't pulled an all-nighter since college or since I got out of college or whatever. And he's just like, I'm 60, whatever he is, 64 years old. He's just like, I'm still pulling all-nighters. He's just like, because I love what I do.
Maybe that's the problem, that you don't pull all-nighters.
Right. Well, that's the thing. And he said, you know, sometimes I have my students who come in and they don't finish their assignment, Jeffrey. You know what I mean? Like they're just, oh, I didn't get to it or whatever it is. I was too busy.
I didn't have time.
Yeah, yeah. And he says, I don't understand. He says, like, what are you doing? I mean, it was a little bit of like a funny thing. He said, you know, what are you doing? Like, what's more fun than this? Because if it's more fun than this, can you invite me? I want to go. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
Like, what is better than this? What is better than making pictures? Because I don't, nothing, you know, I'm not there, you know? So yeah, it was a really sort of poignant talk. It was like, it was really good. Anyway, I just thought that was fitting to your conversation about, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I think about a lot because you go, okay, well, if you want to be
a creative professional, Bill.
Yeah.
Right. You know, what does that look like? And some of my favorite projects that I've gotten to talk to people about, the money had nothing to do with it, or it was a backhanded success.
Yep. Yeah. They weren't planning on making money. They were just doing what they did, and they made money.
And, okay, example that kind of segues into, I saw Blade Runner over the weekend.
Right.
I thought it was pretty fantastic. There was one scene that I didn't think worked, and it wasn't the content, it was the way it was shot.
Okay.
I think it could have worked a little better a different way, but no spoilers. It was beautiful. You know, we'll get to that in a second. But you've got Denny directing, you've got Roger Deakins, cinematographer, you've got Harrison, you've got Ryan Gosling, you've got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars behind it.
Right.
And it didn't make any money.
It didn't do well?
Made like 30 something million over the weekend.
Really?
Which, not great.
I'm surprised.
Right? We went opening night, so Friday night, 7 p.m., there was nobody in the theater.
Wow, that should have been packed.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they took too long, Jeffrey.
By the time
the original's from 1980, you know?
82, yeah. 82. By the time the credits started, the theater was maybe 40 people in the theater.
Wow.
Maybe. And this is opening night at, you know, this giant megaplex. And it was playing on two screens. When we came out, nobody online for the next showing. Nobody.
Conrad went with Ali last Thursday night or whatever, late show, like a 10 o'clock show. And I think her thing was like sold out, but maybe it was like early, you know, it was like the day before the official launch, or, you know, like it was like a late night thing and the super fans went out or something. I'm surprised that didn't make me, you know, I guess you never can tell. She said it was actually pretty good, but a little too long.
I think that's one of the things it's going to work against. It's almost 3 hours. It's 242, 247, something like that.
I'll watch it when it comes out.
It just goes to show that you can have all the things going for you.
Yep.
And you still don't know.
Right. And the Blair Witch Project makes a fortune.
Yeah. To go back 25 years or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, but that's kind of the thing. In fact, I was talking to Freddie over the weekend, and, you know, we're in this weird spot of cinema where in many cases, the best films are being made for television. Because the film market is such that the really cheap movies get made and the really expensive movies get made.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to make a $30 million movie.
Right.
Or a $40 million movie.
Which is crazy. But then again, you know, you have this thing where you spend $200 million and I'm sure in the long run, Blade Runner new movie will do fine. You know what I mean? I'm sure they'll make their money back.
It's got to make $300 million
I guess you're right.
To break even. More than that. 360, I think, to break even.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can't force this stuff. It's amazing how you can try. But, I mean, that gets back to the whole idea of anything I've ever done that I'm really proud of or that did really well was a small thought that grew, not a big thought that I dove into. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of value in that. And sometimes when I try to think big thoughts and go, oh, I'm going to think big, you know.
That's not what makes it.
I stop myself and I go, no. This isn't how it works. You know what I mean? Like, to back off. You know, this is,
you've never
had that work out before. Do it the other way around.
I will say it was a gorgeous movie.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
Gorgeous.
Serious, big budget.
Yeah. And, In watching some of the press the press is horrible for this movie.
Interviews and stuff they're doing?
Yeah, they're awful. They're awful. They're the same, you know, six questions. I've heard the story of how Harrison Ford punched Ryan Gosling 10 times. I've heard the story about how Jared Leto said if he was a better actor, he wouldn't need contact lenses and all this other BS. And whatever. There were a lot of missed opportunities. For some interesting conversation, I think.
Did you read the Esquire article that Harrison did? It was Esquire or
GQ?
GQ,
big did, long
was,
one. Yeah,
yeah. Was that interesting?
It was better. Partially because it was over the course of several interactions.
Yeah.
There was a talk that Harrison did at Google, and it was funny. I was kind of, you know, bitching to Freddie about this, where the interviewer, the guy sits down, he's got his notes with him, and Harrison sits down and And, you know, he says, oh, yeah, you know, a lot's changed since you know, 2019 and 1982 and all that. And Harrison's right. like, oh, you know, I've changed. And something to that effect, like yeah. opening this door for conversation. And the guy just looks down at his notes. He's like, yeah, okay, so question number one. And he just launches into this rhetoric of the same 10 questions or 5 questions that have been asked over and over and over again, rather than going, hey, here's something that he obviously wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Here's an opening that I could have mined for a story that not everybody else has gotten.
Yeah. But some people play it safe. Some people are terrible at interviews.
Yeah. Some people are just bad interviewers.
By the way, Dan Winter says you're an excellent interviewer.
Aw, did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really sweet. He was so fun. I should release the first part of that conversation where we spend 45 minutes talking about soap and dental hygiene. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, you probably should.
Anyway, so the press is for it is awful, but I think one of the things that makes it so beautiful, and you can speak to this, is the reality of what they made. This wasn't a big green screen production. Right. In fact, Denny in one of the interviews said that he could count on one hand the number of times they used a green screen because it was practical. The sets were practical. The lights were practical. The big projections of joy towards the end of the film, where you've seen it in the trailer, the big pink girl with the blue hair that's talking around, that was there. That was projected giant on the screen. The cityscape as Deckard is looking out of the casino. That cityscape is all there. They brought Sid Mead in to design the cityscape, and it wraps around the set. So the actors are reacting to something. There's a visceral quality to the world that goes beyond just let's create it in CG.
Yeah.
Which Deakins said is the reason that all these movies look the same, because these people are just phoning in these effects. They know how to do it. They know how to do this effect, that effect, and they all end up looking the same.
And they have the same handful of effects houses that are using similar software that are, you know,
sure. Sure.
I think I think one of the problems with a lot of this stuff is that when, in the same way that, you know, when, if you take pictures with a Canon camera, unless you do something in post to give it some sort of look for yourself, it's going to feel very much like every other picture people have taken with a Canon camera. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it has that look, that feel to it, right?
Sure. And you could say the same thing about the Fuji X-Trans or, Nikon.
Yeah. Or you could argue the same thing about film, but there used to be, back in the day, there was a lot more that people did. You know, people had
multiple
different kinds of film, and they'd use filters and blah, 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 blah. Like people don't do that kind of stuff now, you know, or less
I just think that the reality of the thing, it's one of the reasons that I am such an ardent fan of Gregory Crutzen's work, is he makes a world. He makes the world for his subjects to react to, rather than going, okay, sit here and we're going to add this all in post.
Right.
There is a psychological reaction, an emotional connection that they can have to their environment. And I think if I were ever going to do pictures, obviously not on the scale that Gregory does, but I love the idea of making environments. And going back to Dan Winters for a second, the portraits that he did for Wired magazine are fantastic. He made these little tableaus, these little set pieces that he put Ridley and Harrison and Ryan in, and that made the picture. Right. No offense to Sarah Oliphant. Her backgrounds are beautiful, but putting these subjects into that environment, and then, you know, his mastery of light and composition on top of that, it creates these photographs that are timeless.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who are doing, I mean, you know, Dan builds all these sets.
He's got a whole workshop.
Yeah, and then there was a guy named Hugh Kretschmer, whose work I definitely want to use as a photographer of the week at some point. Here, I'm just going to put a link in here for you. Whose work you've seen before?
What are you putting in Skype?
I'll stick it in the show notes because I'll add it to the thing so people can go look at it. Whose work you've seen before, because he's done, like, go look at his portraits and you'll see pictures of.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. I've seen
this guy's work. And I mean, just a lot of them are amazingly good. And he does them using, he builds them, you know, like he actually builds, and then he'll do these crazy things. Wait, everywhere.
What do you mean?
Okay. So he will shoot stuff, print it out, and create. Apparently he started, if you go to constructions on his site here, right?
Yep.
Okay. These are light table. He starts putting stuff down and he builds it up from below. Then he uses airbrush to add in the other stuff, like to the shading, and then shoots it with a large format camera.
So is this a single shot?
Single shot in camera.
No kidding.
Right? All of these. And then
monster.
Yeah. And then he goes and he starts shooting stuff. If you go to Fables Commerce. He started building all of these things here. Go to slanted for a second, and you can see this.
Slanted.
All right, the woman.
Yeah, follow along, guys.
Sorry about that.
Bill's got a link in the show notes.
The woman on the right with the camera,
on the tripod. Yeah,
yeah. Here's the thing that was done without Photoshop.
Shut it.
Yeah, he took multiple pictures and then cut them out and stuck them. Like he does this all this crazy stuff where he's. Basically, here, go a couple down. You'll see the one of the ears on the wall.
So he's cutting parts of these out and then photographing the printed cutouts as part of the composition?
Yes, right. So go down to the one where it's the ears on the wall. Those are prints of ears that he taped to the wall. Those aren't actual ears.
Well, he's got to use Photoshop to cover up where they connect, don't they? Doesn't he?
I don't know. Like, it's just, yeah, I mean, maybe he does and goes and cleans that up, but he actually shoots these things in IRL, as it were. Right. So this guy, my point being is, and you can click down all these things and like, I mean, he starts doing some weird crazy
look at
stuff.
The one of the, go down a little further. The woman walking the topiary dogs. Shut up.
And they're actual. Yeah. Right. 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 Exactly. Okay.
So I would love a print of that. I would hang a print of that.
So anyway, this guy was there too, but he was talking about practical effects. Mm-hmm. Of doing this kind of stuff in a similar kind of way, right? And a lot of this stuff, I mean, you know, I don't build a whole lot of stuff most of the time, but it's not that I don't have the hands or mind to build stuff. I just don't have the room or the budget to build a lot of stuff, you know? But it's amazing the things that this guy was doing. It just made me think, oh my God, I need to just sort of dive in and do more crazy practical effects, like come up with an idea. And, you know, there's one right below that, Jeffrey, where the guy's like standing on top of the building.
Yeah.
The building is a box with a print on it on top of his building. So like that's a box the guy's standing on that has a picture of a building printed on it. So that's
in camera. Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like stuff like that where you're like, what? You know what I mean? Like you would never, you know, I would never do it that way, but that's certainly a way to do it, which is amazing, you know? Anyway, this is all to say, yeah, the practical effect thing is totally an amazing thing.
And there is a satisfaction of walking out onto something that you've built. I mean, one of the jobs that I had a long time ago was working for an effects company, and we built, there was a project, it was an aerospace museum in Caracas, Venezuela, and we built scale models of the shuttle with a full scale model of the shuttle.
Oh, right. I remember that. Yeah.
Motion control thing. But, you know, we built a LEM and you could climb up into the LEM, and we had all the, you know, working switches and toggles and lights. And there was something about not only the construction and the finishing of that, but standing in it that is so much different than, well, we can add this in post.
Yep. 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 The question is, does the average person care or notice?
I don't know that the average person cares, but in looking at this work, wait, how do you pronounce his name? Kretschmer?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's Kretschmer. Yeah.
Hugh Kretschmer. Looking at this work, this gets back to kind of what is art, right? Many people, especially in kind of the museum system, will tell you that art is rooted in transformation.
Okay.
So if there's a transformation of perception, if there's a transformation of materials, if there's a transformation of mindset, even when you find out that these things are practical, when that these things are real, there's a, I think there's a different reaction. You want to go back and look, right? Yeah. You want to go back and go, well, wait a minute.
Well, yeah. Wait a minute. If you find out that, if you hear the backstory, you do.
Yeah.
Or at least people like you and I do.
It becomes more interesting to me, to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
That first shot, that perils of being Ken, like the guy in the box.
Okay, that's a guy, an actual guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is, he was like his assistant or whatever it is. And they actually stuck him in a box out on all these actual places. Apparently these were
so
shot.
So they built this box and mocked this thing up so it looks like an old 50s.
The one where he's sitting with the price tag on his face with the giant parrot and stuff like that, that's an actual set some guy is sitting in, and they poured like four cans of hairspray under his hair to get it to feel like that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Look at the one where the guy is being held by the hand outside the toy store.
So now you got a little forced perspective.
Apparently that's
happening?
A print of a hand.
Okay.
Hanging right behind the guy. And you know what I mean? Like that kind of.
Yeah. 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 Shoot it shallow enough where it goes slightly soft and he's sharp. Wow. Yeah,
right. I mean, it's just, it's amazing work. And what we, we can use this guy some other day. But it's just, it's really cool. Man, I had, can I get a twist to another conversation I had that really interesting? Sure. We were sitting down at lunch yesterday and this guy was sitting across from us. And the nice thing about this is that there's, 150 people at this thing.
Tell people what you were.
Oh, sorry.
So it's not in an abstract.
So I was at the Eddie Adams workshop, which Eddie Adams, famous photojournalist. For the last 30 years, there's been this workshop up at his family farm up in middle of nowhere, New York. It's like, upstate New York. Mm-hmm. Eddie died, I guess, 13 years ago or so, but everyone's kept it going. Thousands of people apply, 100 kids get chosen, and you all go up there, and a bunch of famous photographers and photo editors and stuff all come sort of descend on the farm. And it's a little bit
who has actually taken over the running of it? Is it his foundation?
His wife still does it. There's a foundation. There's a whole team of people who were, his friends and family who do this every year. And Nikon
and Adobe. Is it the same people that come, or do they rotate in different speakers every year?
There are some people who come all the time. Like, I think Dan was there. Dan Winters was one of the students the first year, I think 30 years ago, something like that. So it's an interesting eclectic group of people. And it's a little bit like, not a cult, but a family. You know what I mean? People who were there, who were just like, we're all in this together. Like this is this special moment. And, it was actually a really intense sort of, not life-changing sort of weekend, but it was definitely a wow kind of weekend. Hmm. And there's a bunch of people there and it's amazing. And everyone is very just approachable, like hanging out, talking, like there's zero attitude, you know what I mean?
Check your ego at the door kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and everyone's absolute sweethearts. And
it seems like a lot of those guys that are up there are very approachable and share their knowledge anyway. So it doesn't seem like that's much of a stretch to say that.
No. But, John White was there, that guy's photojournalism work.
Yep.
Victoria Will was up there. Lots of people were up there. We had a really great time. What was I going to say? So anyway,
you're sitting down.
There's
a meal.
There's lunches and there's programs and the kids go out and do on assignments and that kind of stuff. And then everyone comes back and they look at their pictures and it's like this 4-day thing. And there's these big lunches that they do, which by the way, the food was amazing. I don't know how the hell they did it cooking for, 200 people, but so I'm sitting down with this guy across from him. And I forget his name, but he was saying that he's a photojournalist and we were talking about the kind of work we do and this kind of thing. And he said, so you really kind of know what you're going for when you start. And I was like, yeah. And he's just like, oh, so you're like creating situations and lighting and all the rest of it. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, it's really interesting. He goes, you must really like control. And I said, yeah.
You think?
And I was like, yeah, I want to know what it is that I'm doing. And I'm like aiming for a goal, right? Most of the time. And he said something really interesting. He said, he's like, that always makes me nervous because if it doesn't go right, it's my fault.
Right.
I prefer chaos. Like he prefers going in a situation where he doesn't know whether he's going to get the shot. He was a stringer for a newspaper.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
so he's more concerned in pulling order from the chaos.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Or being when something happens and trying to capture it, where I'd rather create it from the beginning so I know what it is that I'm getting.
But that's interesting.
It was a really interesting way of putting it, control versus chaos.
And the distinction of, you know, I would imagine within the confines of those sort of, within those parameters, you are much easier. You disappoint more easily than he does because
he doesn't
kind of go. Right. Right.
Yeah.
He has less. There's more to go wrong for you, whereas more going wrong for him may lead to better photographs.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. True. Yeah. Yeah. More things that he didn't expect could lead to better photographs for him.
Right.
Where I'm trying to reduce the things that I don't expect.
Interesting. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
I think it's true. I also see the flip side of the, if you have control and things go wrong, it's your fault, right? That's kind of what he said.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that is when things go right, it's your fault as well. You know what I mean? And that for me, if I'm basing my work and my reality on chaos, for lack of a better term, I mean, I know it's a gray, it's a scale. I also have a hard time taking any sort of credit for what I get, because was it just that I happened to be sitting there at the time that that thing happened? And you know what I mean? It's, for me, it's less satisfaction because I don't feel like I'm enough of a participant.
Yeah, you tend to discount
folly. And I don't mean folly in a bad way. I just mean that, like, happenstance.
You tend to discount the ability to see the scene within the chaos.
True. Yeah. Discount. I guess it's just, for me, I don't find it satisfying. You know, I mean, that's the thing.
Because it doesn't allow you a lot of control. In your view, this chaos is going, I just happen to look over and see this.
Yeah, exactly.
And click.
Yeah.
But for someone like this fellow or any number of photojournalists, that's the vision, is being able to spot, being able to compose, being able to see some sort of composition within the chaos.
Absolutely. And you know what? The whole thing is a photojournalism workshop, and the people that are there, the kids that are there, they all want to be Eddie Adams, you know? Like, I'm hanging out with Nick Ut the other day, and I'm like, this guy took the napalm photo, and you know what I mean? Like, here I am sitting having lunch with him. And that guy, you know, these people are all sort of, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but they've all drank the photojournalism Kool-Aid. You know what I mean? Like, these people are all in. Like, this is what keeps them up at night, is thinking about this stuff.
Literally. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Where I've never been, I appreciate photojournalists, but I certainly don't have the photojournalism bug that a lot of these people have, you know? So it was very interesting from the outside watching them talk about it and hearing, like, the passion at which these people discussed what they do, which is slightly different than what I do. And it's we all have the same passion. It's just directed in a different way. Sorry.
Are you able to acknowledge a distinction in terms of value between what you do and what they do?
Oh, of course.
In terms of, is fine art photography and portraiture more valuable, and I got my air quotes out, more valuable to you than photojournalism, street reportage, etc.? Is it a value judgment for you?
It's less of a value judgment of that doesn't have value, and more of a, I prefer Coke to coffee. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say that coffee isn't incredibly important to many, many people. And, you know, it's just, it's not my cup of tea. Bad pun.
Right. Right.
But
yeah, it was actually really bad.
that coffee is not my cup of tea.
Right.
I think that for me, if you said you need to delete one area of photography, is it photojournalism or is it fine art photography? I personally would probably stick with fine art photography. You know, that's more interesting for me to look at. Hold on before we leave this. Yeah.
Where then do you place, we were talking about this a couple weeks ago, where does the new body of work from Joey L fit in? Is that is that a hybrid that straddles both, or is it still in one camp or the other for you?
I think that the stuff he's doing like in the war zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that feels more photojournalistic to me than it does his. I think his portraits of the people in Africa that he did a few years ago, I thought those, I liked those more than I like the new stuff.
Interesting.
And I also think that he had more control over that stuff than he does it this stuff. I think there's some good pictures in there, but I don't think he's the greatest photojournalist ever. You know what I mean? I think there's people who do that better. But you know, the people who do it better probably didn't do it great when they, you know what I mean, when they started doing it. You know, I don't know what he's going for. You know, I don't know his goal. I guess it's sitting somewhere in the middle.
This might be a bigger discussion for another week, but does knowing the goal matter to how or to what degree you appreciate the work?
No, I mean, I don't know his goal, and so I can appreciate the work on its merits. You know, I mean, on its just visual basis. I looked at a lot of those pictures and I thought, yeah, these are great. I'm not going to go buy a book of it. You know what I mean? But then again, that Eugene Richards guy we'll use next week, he's won every award since God invented awards, you know, and his work was absolutely stunning when he's showing it. I can't look at that work. There was part of his presentation that I was sitting there and he was, you know, with some guy who was dying slowly of, you know, heart disease or whatever it is, you know, like this really heavy guy who, and I was like, I don't, you know, you and I have both watched people decline. And I was like, I can't watch it. I mean, this is incredibly visceral and he's very successful in the sense that I'm sort of having a little PTSD watching this and hearing this person talk. I don't want to see this right now. You know what I mean? So like, the quality of the work and your desire to look at it are not necessarily related. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Interesting.
And all this is not to say that photojournalism doesn't have massive value and all the rest of it. Absolutely. It does. It's just, to me, it doesn't always resonate with me the way it does for some other people, you know?
Yeah.
And pretty much everyone there was there for that reason, you know, and there were lots of moving things and people who spoke, and it was, you know, it was amazing hearing these people talk about their stuff. But, photojournalism, I think is there's very much a sense of where, I wonder where photojournalism is going, you know? And I just say that in the sense of, a lot of these students and stuff, they want to be the guy from Nat Geo from 30 years ago. They want to be Steve McCurry.
Yeah. Or everybody wants to be Gordon Parks.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And I, you know, the question is like whether at what point does a certain field of photography and studying it and wanting to be part of it become almost like a classical conservatory rather than the next step, you know? Like, you can go out and you could take pictures like Cartier-Bresson or Robert Capa. But what are you saying that wasn't said 70 years ago when Cartier-Bresson and Robert Capa took those pictures? You see what I'm saying?
Well, I think you can find a thread and pull it in a different way. You know, kind of going back to Gordon Parks. You know, do you know? The Baltimore book by Devlin.
I don't know that one.
Hold on one sec. It is. Oh man. Hold on one sec. It's in my cart.
Sexual Utopia Empowered. No, I'm just kidding.
A Beautiful Ghetto. Devin Allen.
Oh, okay. Oh, that guy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So here's a guy who's been compared to Gordon Parks.
Yep.
But is seeing things through his own lens. No pun.
Right. Yep.
I think you can pull what makes that work and make it your own. You can pull from the intimacy of Parks and make it your own. You can pull from the quiet sort of brutality almost of Hetherington and make it your own. You can pull from, you know, where it does become new. It does become a different way of seeing.
But, you know, it was interesting. Somebody said, God, I don't know, which somebody got up there and was talking about pictures they took on the Pettus Bridge when Obama was down there marching.
Yeah.
All those guys at whatever, 50 years or whatever. And he said, you know, the thing that people don't talk about is that W was there too. And almost every photographer chose to basically, you know, crop him out in camera. You know, I'm going to zoom to 105 and have it be Obama and not include W.
Right.
You know, that photojournalists make all kinds of massive choices that not only to frame it and to tell a story in an honest way.
Sure.
There's a lot of framing and telling it in a way that is manipulative.
There's an agenda, sure.
Yeah. And I thought that was really interesting too. So I think photojournalism is an amazing thing and has a place, and there's things that can be said in a photograph that can't be said in a lot of in other media. But there were also people like the Eugene Richards also showed a bunch of videos, right? Like he's moving into doing, and none of the shots, Jeffrey, in the video, the camera moved an inch. It was basically on a tripod on sticks. It was basically a moving photo that was in front of him. You know what I mean? Like he's shooting an old farmhouse in the field. It's the old farmhouse in the field. And then he goes inside and he sets it up and he composes it like a photograph and he hits record for 20 seconds or 30 seconds. And then he goes and does something else. So it's like this moving photograph, as it were. You know,
well, and who did the, there were portraits, that I first saw the style that Hillman Curtis kind of did, where he would do these 30-second video portraits of people.
But
that was based on, that was a riff on, I think, stuff
Warhol did a lot of that stuff.
Like
the single roll of whatever, you know, 8mm or whatever.
Right.
Just sitting on a person for a minute and a half or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that kind of thing. It's interesting hearing a lot of these old timers, as it were, these people who've been around forever, and how they see the industry and they see photography and what they're trying to get out of it and what they hand off to the next generation. There was a talk yesterday of three young people who are all real big deal Instagram, you know, kind of people. The guy I shot for yesterday's picture, El Drago, has 4 million Snapchat followers. 4 million.
Wow.
Could you imagine having any sort of audience in the millions? But here's the thing. All of these people, they're shooting with their phones. They're shooting with a camera. It's both of those. It's video. It's stills. It's, you know what I mean? And then one of them said, you know, you really got to think about the captions. It's all about the captions. So now they're writing. You know what I mean? It's a multidisciplinary thing, not better or worse. It's just, that's arguably where all of that's going. So if you have a Leica and a Rolla Tri-X, like you're maybe behind, you know what I mean?
For this guy.
Yeah.
Al Drago.
Yeah.
What's his thing? Like, what is he famous for being famous or?
I think he shoots for the Washington Post now. He lives in DC. But he's young. He's in his, you know, 20s. And apparently I haven't seen any of his, I shot a video of him for the thing. I was there playing in a band and then I ended up working in the so-called black team, sort of like the support team, making videos for the award show, just a lot of like going around and doing these silly videos. And I ended up shooting him for this thing where he was doing sort of a Vegematic, you know, thing about the new Profoto A1, you know, the little speed lighty thing that Profoto's come out with.
Okay. I'm looking at his site. He's got a ton of photojournalist work on his web. So he's
right. So he's a photojournalist.
But he's using Snapchat and Instagram to further his base and grow his brand.
Right. But none of that
to use the parlance of our time.
right. Which is really funny because Heisler also said, you know, people keep talking about things being on brand and doing this, that, and the other. He's just like, I don't think about that kind of stuff. He's like, I don't think about my style. He's like, his style is in hindsight, right? So, you know,
if he were starting out as a photographer,
maybe he
today,
would have to. Maybe
he would have to.
Right. Maybe that's the way the world's going. So anyway, apparently Al is very entertaining on his Snapchats, which is apparently why
he's got some nice stuff.
Yeah, no, he's a good shooter. And a extremely nice guy. But you get my point that like an audience of 4 million, who has an audience of 4 million people? You know,
maybe, I might have to ask you to introduce me. That might be an interesting conversation.
Yeah. 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 We can do that. Okay. So yeah, there's a lot of this stuff where the world is changing, and to know which new fad is a flash in the pan and which is actual change. I think that's a hard thing to know. I think it's a hard
something
thing
that I think both of us admittedly are terrible at.
Right. Cause you don't want to always jump on the next thing and like be kind of following the crowd around, you know, like that doesn't,
you don't want to still be telling people in 2017 to go check out your MySpace.
Exactly. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to be a sheep and just follow wherever the crowd goes.
Right.
And so, you know, trying to know the difference between those things, Jeffrey, you know what I mean? To know when the crowd is walking down a dead end, because invariably they do, you know what I mean? There's all kinds of things that are like, oh, this is the fad now. Nope, not the fad anymore. We're moving on to this other thing. You know, it's like, well, I just stayed back here.
And I was just getting comfortable with this.
Exactly. Yeah. It's dead and gone. Now, like, you know, will Snapchat be here 5 years from? I don't know. Apparently Instagram stories are really chipping away at Snap, you know? I don't know. I'm not a big user of either of them. So I have a hard time judging that. Or, you know, I even said to him, man, I'm old. I don't get it. You know, it's like, it's all so ephemeral and so quick. And he's just like, yeah, it's just the way it is, you know, like, and it's just, it's weird, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I definitely feel old. Even the picture. Okay. Look at the picture, that he put up, go to Capitol Hill on Al's site. If you have it there, I'll put a link in the show notes.
Al.
It's a picture of, Hillary Clinton and, Paul Tonko.
The opening shot there.
Yeah. And look at all the people behind. Every single one of them is on their phone taking a picture of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like and they're going to put it up on Instagram and they're going to, oh my God, look, it's Hillary Clinton, blah, 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 you know, IRL, blah, 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 you know.
Guys and girls, I'm sorry if you're hearing noise. Can you hear that? They're trimming trees today. So
I think it's fine.
I'm sorry if there's some rumble in the background.
There's rumble in your Bronx.
there's rumble. I don't know what that means.
But here's the thing, Jeffrey. All the people who are sort of this generation, none of them didn't have their phone in their hands 24/7.
Right.
I mean, it was constant. It's like you wake up, you pick up your phone, and you are outputting stuff. My God, you know. Some of them were, you know, I've got to go read my Instagram mail, and there's 26 things in there, you know what I mean? Right. From people.
And it's fascinating to me, and I'm sure we've mentioned this, but it's fascinating to me that not one sci-fi writer got this right. Not one of them saw cell phones being ubiquitous with connected. Personal communication. Not one.
Yeah.
Even William Gibson, who coined cyberspace, you know, didn't see it coming. Fascinating.
Yeah. It was, I don't know. It's, the world's changing. I don't know where it's going. But I feel like every year, every event is a marker, right? Where, you know, at one point during the weekend, everyone gets together and they do this big giant group shot, right? They set up a bunch of pro photo packs and they like blast the, you know, the whole thing and wide angle lens up high. And, you know, inside the barn, there are the group shots from all the other years, like big prints of them up on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was actually talking to Al and he was looking at some of them and I walked by him and I was like, oh, he's like, yeah, some of these were really like not sharp. You know what I mean? Like bad, like 35 millimeter frames from 1993, you know, that are blown up big, you know, but you think to yourself, did those people in 1993, for example, realize what 1993 meant in photojournalism? You don't know at the time. You're blind to your present, you know, because you don't know where it sits in the context of everything. You don't necessarily know where things are going or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I, in the same way, you know, this was the 30 year anniversary of this thing. And maybe in 10 years, if it's still going on, people will look back and say, oh man, remember the 30th year? Like this is, that was the pivot point of where photojournalism went, and we were there, and those.
But they can only see that 5 or 10 years hence.
Exactly.
You have no idea. They can't say this is the year that it's going
to
change.
Yeah. And you know, when you do stuff like over and over again, if you go to Disneyland once a year for 10 years or whatever,
which
it's only which you did.
Oh yeah. Had an annual pass for many, many years.
Okay. But you know, well, Disney's a bad example because they do a very good job maintaining it. But if you went someplace, if you went to Venice Beach for every year for 20 years, right, and you see how Venice Beach changes, if you just go 2 years in a row, it's pretty much the same. It's like these small incremental changes, you know, that build up over time.
Well, going back to California after being away from it for 2 years.
And it was different enough.
It felt different, Bill. It was only 2 years,
right,
but it felt foreign on some level.
Yeah. Yep.
You know,
it's all very fascinating to me. I'm tired and haven't, kind of processed everything, and maybe there's more stuff to pop around my head, just ideas of things to talk about, but we can get to them later. But I just thought it was super fun, and there's lots of great people there. I met some great people. It was a good
time. It sounds like there was lots of good conversation that gets revisited and expanded upon from year to year.
Yeah. And people just sitting down and having these conversations,
right,
like sitting down with John White and just talking to him about stuff, just sitting there with him. You know, it's just like, how would I ever get this opportunity? You know?
But even that, Bill, I mean, I think that sort of underpins the value of just getting together with other people that maybe do what you do or do something not what you do, and just talking.
Yep.
Just having a cup of coffee, having a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I think that's something that we have lost in favor of better, and again, I've got my air quotes out, better ways to communicate, but there's still nothing like just sitting down with someone.
Yeah. It's a different thing. And it's also people, like you said, you know, kind of checking your ego at the door. So everyone's sort of on their best behavior. And, you know, it's everyone's like pitching in. And, you know, if something needs to get moved or somebody's doing something, you'll say, you know, people will come up and go, "You need help?" And I'd be like, "Oh, we're trying to guess. All right, let's do it." You know what I mean?
No one
was like, "Eh, I don't want to go talk to Sally.
I'm not a grip anymore."
Right. There was none of that.
Yeah.
It was entirely like, we're all in this together. We're all lucky to be here. Everyone pitches in. You know what I mean? Like this is everyone's on
like
the same
a, like a camp mentality. I mean, that's what it sounds like.
It was very, very much like that. Well, what else we got?
To wit, if you want to get together with some other photographers, and you're going to be in DC on the 22nd of October, sunrise at the Lincoln Memorial, and we're going to do the monuments. It's being organized by Chris Connors. His brother John will be there. Freddie will be there, I think.
Is that a song from the 80s? Do the monuments? We'll do the monuments.
If not, it should be. There's your task for this week. you need to have a theme song for this thing by the 22nd. If you've got questions on it, podcast it on takingpictures.com, and we can relay them to Chris or John. But sunrise looks like it's going to be at 7:30, 7:45, somewhere
in
there.
Then.
So not
later.
Too early, but it should be fun. And maybe breakfast afterwards or something. So
it's
maybe Bill will even be there. Who knows?
That Sunday I will not be there because I have stuff that Saturday and Sunday. Sorry. But next time I'll be there. What are you talking about? I've been down there a bunch.
All right. What are we at?
You
want to talk about these people?
Should we do our sponsor read and then
the Jiggity Fresh Books?
Jiggity Fresh Books. If you're a freelancer and you need to send some
freelance
invoices.
Son.
Yeah. If you need to send some invoices to the guy client, get paid. Come on, give me get paid.
Get paid, son.
If you need to get paid.
It was horrible. Oh my God. People are gonna beat me. Horrible.
You need to use FreshBooks, an online accounting platform. It's fantastic, ridiculously easy to use cloud accounting software for freelancers that are architects behind their work that they make. Simplified tasks like invoicing, tracking expenses, getting paid online. FreshBooks has drastically reduced the time it takes for over 10 million people, Jeffrey, to deal with their paperwork.
That's a lot of millions.
It is. You can send clean, that's professional
almost looking- as many people as that follow Al on Snapchat.
Yeah, exactly. FreshBooks and Al Drago have similar, same order of magnitude. You can send clean, professional looking invoices in just about 30 seconds. With literally two clicks, you can set yourself up to receive payments online, which is fantastic. It goes right into your bank account from like a MasterCard. You can take pictures of receipts on your phone using the FreshBooks mobile app. Which makes claiming your expenses a million times easier. Just adds it straight to an invoice that gets sent to the client. And it's been rebuilt from the ground up, completely redesigned from the ground up, custom built for the way that you work. So get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and more importantly, get paid quickly. They got this new projects feature that lets you share files and messages with your clients, contractors, and employees. You can see how quickly things happen when all your conversations live in one place. They got a new notification center. It's like your personal assistant, Jeffrey. You always know what's changing in your business since you last logged on and what needs to be dealt with pronto, like overdue invoices. Speaking of overdue invoices, they sent automated late payment reminders. So if somebody hasn't paid you, it reminds them and says, hey, you haven't paid Jeffrey yet for that voiceover work. You got to get on
right.
That.
Right. Now, they're all my people are terrific about that.
Yeah,
Thank you, people.
So that makes your life a lot easier. And then speaking of that, you can also tell when somebody's actually looked at the invoice. When you email to a client, FreshBooks can show you whether they've seen it or not, which puts an end to the guessing games of whether or not somebody received the invoice and whether they're going to pay. You know, they you looked at it last Tuesday. Don't give me that runaround.
Yeah, don't give me any guff, mister.
And when you're working as a freelancer, you're working with clients all over the world. FreshBooks lets you send invoices in a currency your clients work in, which spares everyone the hassle of currency conversions, which is a nightmare.
That's a great feature.
It really is. And if you have any questions whatsoever, FreshBooks award-winning customer service is amazingly helpful, super friendly, and has zero attitude. Plus, a real live person usually answers in 3 rings or less. If you're listening to this and you're not using FreshBooks yet, now would be the time to try it. FreshBooks is offering unrestricted 30-day free trial for all of our listeners. No credit cards required. All you have to do is go to FreshBooks.com, enter on taking pictures in the How Did You Hear From Us section, and that'll let FreshBooks know that you came from us, and it'll help support the show and 5x5. Thank you so much to FreshBooks for their support.
Thanks, FreshBooks.
All right, so we got a lot of stuff. Oh, so what's going on with Google right here?
Well, I just thought this was interesting. Somebody tweeted this to me, maybe to us, but I think to me. So Google is giving you unlimited full-res photo storage for Pixel 2 owners.
Okay.
Only until 2020, though. Then it ends. Then you got to pay for it.
I'm not going to Pixel phone for more than 3 years, probably, but yes.
No. But I'm not trying to single out Google.
Yeah.
All I'm trying to do is highlight how these things can change when you depend on one platform or another, that the terms can change. They can go away. They can start charging. Just be aware.
Yeah,
I guess that's the only thing there is nothing as potentially long-term reliable as, you know, a hard drive in your basement or something, that you can control rather.
What's interesting is the fact that the cloud, right? Remember when the cloud services started becoming a thing and they would just draw a cloud in a diagram, you know, like, and everything goes to the cloud and they just draw a cloud, you know, as like representing the internet, you know, and where things go. I think that stuff has gotten to the point where it's almost like, it's not like you send stuff up to a server anymore. You're sending it up to gangs of servers all over the world and pieces of it are here, there. It's become more and more distributed in a way that is more cloud-like as time goes on. You know what I mean? You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm listening, Bill.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Jeez.
I think that that's interesting. As time goes on, I don't even know. I mean, I guess my pictures are on Dropbox. They're on Google Photos. You know, the stuff from my phone. I just have it upload to a bunch of places just in case my phone dies or gets blown up or, you know, that they're somewhere.
Gets blown up. A rocket launcher hit Bill's phone.
My roommate at this thing had a S8. Right. Jared had it, which was pretty cool.
Big beautiful screen.
Yeah, on a fairly small phone. Yeah, very cool. Anyway, what's Yashica doing?
Yashica, I don't know if you saw this, but they've been teasing for a while that they were going to reinvent, you know, digital cameras. And they've come out with this thing called the Y35.
Okay.
It's on Kickstarter right now, and it uses these digital film cartridges basically that you buy from
Yashica.
And each of the cartridges has a different style or look to it. ISO, digital filter settings, color, etc.
Okay.
Kinda gimmicky, but kinda? Also kinda interesting.
It is certainly interesting, but it's also like a really funny idea that you would basically remove the advantages of digital on purpose.
Right. You know? That's kind of what I'm getting at. Is we're gonna take something that has inherently unlimited options, and now we're going to give you.
Oh, I see. So the ISO, color, and digital filter settings are controlled by this cartridge block.
The Digifilm. But, right. Yes.
But the images are still saved on an SD card.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's silly. I
love the idea of
it is a very cute idea.
I love the idea of somebody coming up with an insertable digital something that allows you to capture digital images from an existing film camera.
Yeah,
you know, that maybe there's a brain and a sensor that goes. That's interesting to me.
Yeah,
but this.
Oh, that's really.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, this is gimmicky in a bad way, in my opinion. Why there was one of the little gags they made an ad for a version of Photoshop Photojournalism Edition, and
oh, no.
Everything but crop and save were grayed out. Right. It was really funny.
That's pretty funny.
It was just like, you know. For you, yeah, photojournal, all the tools you need and none of them that you're allowed to use. You know what I mean?
Right, like,
it's like clone stamp tool, and they go try to click on it, goes bonk, bonk, bonk. Like,
like there's an audio cue too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
It was like the filters menu was just empty.
That's funny.
It was really cute. And a good idea, right? Because that's, you know, where that world is.
Right.
And everyone's hooting and hollering because that's
pretty funny.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
Photojournalism edition.
It was cute. Hey, you know, I was thinking the other day I was going to order some those notebooks, the Word ones, I guess, the ones you were recommending. And that got me stuck on Amazon's website just looking at notebooks.
Oh, there are tons. There.
Right, 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 right.
There are tons. I am, in fact, staring at some Muji A5 notebooks right now.
Okay, so... This is just my short little idea. It's not like a big thought that we have to expound on, but maybe part of the problem is that these notebooks are so well designed and beautiful that you don't want to tarnish them by writing on them. And that maybe the answer is to use a crappy notebook, like a little spiral one from CVS that costs $2.
Yeah. Or like the black and white composition books that we all used.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I feel like I was wondering if maybe part of your notebook paralysis was just that those notebooks that you use are too nice.
I think there's part of it. I also kind of came to the conclusion maybe after the last show, did get a lot of feedback.
People send us all kinds of solutions to Jeffrey's problem.
Well, part of it I think is the size, the physical size of the Field Notes notebooks. I went back and looked at, because I still have a ton of you know, either loose leaf or some of my old notebooks, and they're much larger. Like I remember, I don't have any of these, but like high school and college, I would carry the 9x12, the black hardbound, you know, just the basic notebooks. Right. And I think part of it is because I draw and sketch and write and annotate and make notes, that Field Note format feels very small and restrictive to me.
Oh, wait, how big are the Field Note ones?
They're like 3.5x4, I think. They're the same size as the Word.
Yeah, and like my little, what's it called one here? What's the, you know, the standard Moleskine one?
Right. Let's see. These are, how big are they? Yeah, 3.5 by 5.5. So they're pretty small.
Yeah, that's I think this size of this one. But the nice thing about these is that you can fit them in your pocket, right? You don't need
right. So I don't know, but I think there is something to that. I've thought about maybe putting out there, doing maybe a notebook exchange. Where and if you're interested, email podcast at ontakingpictures or message me directly. You send me one of your favorite blank notebooks, and I'll send you a 3-pack of field notes.
Wait, what are, so it's just a way to
For me to try what other people are using.
Oh, I see. Okay,
what they actually use. Don't just pick something at random. Okay, but you've got like, oh, this is my favorite. Like if you dig the Muji.
Right.
You know, A5s, send me a 3-pack of those and I'll send you a 3-pack of field notes or something.
You know what's really interesting about this? When you first said swap notebooks, I imagined you swapping notebooks that you had worked in.
Oh, God, no. Like, I want somebody inside my head in that
way.
No,
that's why I was just like,
blank.
But I wonder we're in a safe place here, Jeffrey. I wonder if your idea will just add to the neuroses.
It might.
Yeah.
It might. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But I've got, you know, I've got a ton of these things and it might be a way to find a new favorite. And if someone has never used a field notes type notebook, then it's, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
If there's any interest, let me know. We'll do it case by case.
Hey, we had a thing here to do the website social media thing, but I think that's a big discussion. You want to save that for next week?
I think that's a big, let's talk about next week. Yeah. Do you want to even tease it or do you want to not even say anything?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to discuss whether you need a website anymore. And then somebody wrote in, listener Josh wrote in asking how to do social media without doing social media. Like, how do I stay connected without getting sucked in? Or, I think are both good topics. So we'll save those for next week.
Wait, that's next week. But wait a minute.
What?
Next week. How are we going to do that? Next week, you're gone.
Next week, I'm back on Wednesday night. So we could do it on Thursday, if that's right, or something like that.
Possible? Okay. So you're back Wednesday. Okay. You're leaving tomorrow, right?
Leaving tomorrow night. Yeah. I'm going to be tomorrow. In Montreal. If anybody's in Montreal or Quebec City, send me an email. And
Millie's up there.
Yeah, I know. Right? I was planning on meeting. Oh, you know what? No, we get back on Thursday. So maybe on Friday, if that's available. I'm going to be up there with the wife and around, and I think we're going to bump into Millie and some other people. So if you're up there in Montreal or Quebec City, let me know. And maybe we can bump into each other.
So let's do that next week, next time.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's a big discussion there. Also a big discussion in the photo book thing, unless you want to do that now. Do you think?
Let's tackle that.
Interestingly enough, I was looking at an article the other day, which was talking about how in the early 90s, Jeffrey, the music business changed to where they stopped selling singles.
Right.
And they would have famous songs like, I think, You Can't Touch This or one of those other MC Hammer songs. They just never put a single version out, which forced people to buy the whole album.
To buy the record, yeah.
To get that song, right? And the article put it in a way that was sort of like, oh, so now we got to spend $20 to get two songs we want and a whole bunch of filler. You know, that sort of argument? In fact, a lot of people use the word filler.
Yes, and you know, inadvertently, we've all purchased records that have had two good songs, not intentionally, but they've had two good songs and the rest has been crap.
Wait, the artist was not intentionally making crap
Two good songs that you like on the record and everything else is like, it's okay.
Yeah.
But essentially you paid $15 or $12, whatever it is for two songs.
I think it's interesting as someone who came from the music world and has a lot of friends in the professional music world, no one's making filler for their albums. You know what I mean? No one knows that there's two good songs and we just got to shovel. We have to come up with 8 more songs to like make this an album.
No, in the
everyone
same way
thinks
that
their
that,
whole thing is good. Yes, they're trying to
in
make
the same
it
way that people are putting up portfolios of photographs. They believe that they're good.
Right.
They may not land with an audience, but we all believe what we're doing is by and large worthwhile and good.
Or we don't
want to put it out into the world.
Right. Sure. But it's interesting the way that this article, and I've read a couple articles similar to this, especially about the music industry, where there's this idea that they're just, you know, packing peanuts for the single. And it's just, it's interesting the way the public perceives art. You know, you could say, oh, you know, I got that new Crudson book and I like these four images and the rest of it is just, you know, stuff he put in there to like make it a book. You know, no one thinks like...
I would smack that person with a shovel.
Right, but no artist thinks like that. No artist I've ever
met. I got your back, Gregory.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You brought him up earlier. That's why he popped up.
I know.
I'm very tired. I was just wondering what you thought on that.
Well, again, nobody's putting out a record of hey, let's just put out two good songs and 12 bad ones. You know? Again, you don't know what's going to click. You don't know what's going to land. We used to have one-hit wonder parties back in the day where you'd bring like the one song that was by that one artist that
I can dream about you.
right. But you can't hold me tonight, Bill. So
such
you know,
a good song.
I can understand it.
Is it intentional by the record companies? Maybe it was. I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the choice of not selling the single and making buy the record was an intentional thing. I guess my issue was more with the idea that the artist's intention was just to like make you buy the record, even though
I don't
it
agree
wasn't
with that.
Good.
I don't agree with that. Now, I don't have any sort of empirical data, but I find it difficult to believe that. An artist would put out, you know, 42 pictures of crap and three good ones, or, you know, one really good song and the rest are just, we had some leftovers.
Yeah, we're all trying really hard to make a bunch of good stuff. The fact that some of it is better than others is not intentional.
Bill, better gets us to 500 hours of what does that even mean?
Well, of course, yeah.
You know?
See episodes 1 through 284.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite, you know, we've had this even recently. Some of my favorite of your recent pictures have been the ones that you didn't choose.
Right.
You thought that X picture was good from this shoot. You know, I preferred Y, and you've had people go back and forth each way. You know, some people say, oh yeah, I really like that one. Some people say I really like this.
You know, my rule for the 365 project is if I get it down to two and I can't choose, I have to choose the riskier one of the two. Like the one that's less like what I would normally do. Like that's sort of my mantra, which is, you know, I choose the one that is a little more out, you know, less safe, as a general rule, which is I don't know. I think it has served me well as just an experiment because I usually put the other one up on my main Instagram feed, you know, so people can see it. And yeah, you've mentioned you've liked a couple of those more than you like the one I chose for the series. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to underscore you're doing the work. You're doing the best you can do.
Right.
You know, you're not phoning this stuff in and going, well, you know, I'll just stick the phone out the window and see what I get and put that up.
Right. I guess I think it's interesting the perception that the public may seems to have of artists, right? That somehow it's not really that serious, or that the people don't take it that serious. You know, everyone thinks that whatever they do is the most important thing in the world, or else you wouldn't be doing it. But people from the outside, I think maybe some of this is a little bit along the lines, Jeffrey, of the whole, who was it that they asked me to make content for the phone. Remember, Radiohead?
Nokia. Radiohead, yeah. Right. Nokia approached Radiohead and said, you know, would you make content? And Tom York was justifiably offended by that.
Like, what do you mean content?
Yeah, this isn't a ringtone.
Just make some hardware to put my music on.
You know? Right. So, we all want to and often do believe that what we're doing is important. That's why it's such a struggle.
Yep. Or else we wouldn't do it.
Yes.
I thought it was really funny. I'll have to find that article, because the way they talk about it, man, it's like it was like almost offensive, you know, like in a weird way. But you know, that's just the way it is. Hey, you mind? Can we go to the group? I'm kind of burning out.
Yeah. Well, Frank, we will get to your Q&A feedback next time.
So now we have a full show next time already.
Yeah, we've got a great show next time already. I'm sorry, another great show.
But
okay.
What do we got? Let me
Eden. I love the bouquet or the balloons of coffee. Love it.
Oh, that's a nice idea. Good job.
That's funny, right?
No, that's amazing.
Yeah, love it.
That's a great one. Dennis's shot with the light coming through the
yep.
The
ooh, yep. Terrific. Beautiful.
What's this one? Aliceo's one. What is that? See the thing on the
A pillow. Oh, a mask. A, looks oh, like a, mask. A sleep mask. Yeah. Yeah stack yeah. of books.
Have you ever used yeah, one of those at mood. Home?
No. No. Okay. Mario.
Earplugs?
Beautiful shot. Nope. Okay. Nope. I cannot. Oh, silence drives me bonkers trying to get to sleep. I have one of those apps that makes the noises and I. Ugh, when I would go like out to my dad's house to visit and it was just like the dead silence of the desert,
yeah.
It would take me forever to fall asleep.
All right, hey, go to the picture. You see the guy in on the subway by the door? These metro ones by
yeah, on. Edward De La Torre?
Yes.
Yeah.
What city is that? I'm looking at the map on the wall. I can't quite tell. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
I'm looking at the shape and stuff. I'm like, I don't think I've been in whatever city that is because I don't recognize that subway map.
Metro rail and busway. Oh, so, you know what? I think that's LA.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because that's the red LA line metro. Going out to North Hollywood. That's the gold line going over to Pasadena.
All right, well, there you go. I've never been
yeah,
on
blue
the,
and green. I was going to say, I also recognize the fabric on the seats.
Man, Mario Mirabile killing it. Up in the,
yeah, that's a fantastic picture, Mario.
The fog, wow. Jim
Richard
Nash
Haynesworth, look at that one. Oh, Jim Nash, yeah, great. Beautiful. Great.
Early morning, man. I like the fog early morning. Andy Duncan's mm-hmm. like shot still of the sun coming up. Wow.
Yep. Bill Meems, another one coming up. Sun
wow,
coming
early
up.
Morning, they killed it.
Yeah, you guys, you Richard got up. Mike Waller. Look at Mike's. Trillium Lake near Mount Hood. Man, that's a nice shot.
It is. Oh, that's beautiful.
Another Bill Meems shot with the flare coming in out of the right. Vicky Brown, don't recognize her. Welcome.
Wow, ooh, look at that. Look at that snow.
Crazy, right?
Man, Canada's already snowing.
another one by Vicky. Look at this one with the flare just coming off the back of that cabin and yeah, lighting yeah, up yeah. the... Oh, man.
She put up a few beautiful. Of them. Look at the one of just the early morning. Negative 26 last December, she put up a picture. Whoa.
Nope.
No.
Joshua Peterson, good. Another one, Bill Meems.
Well, Mike apparently Kukubica. Early morning hit a
yeah, hit a nerve. Edward De La Torre, nice.
Oh, that's really funny. Tim Sharp put up a picture of me.
at sunset. Look at that.
and he still in a wheat field.
Oh my God.
with yeah, chiggers. Good stuff. There were chiggers in that field.
I don't even ugh.
Yeah, chiggers.
That's the
yeah.
thing. The East Coast, man. The bugs on the East Coast.
That was in Kansas, but yeah. But yeah, chiggers. Ooh, why? There are more bugs on the East Coast?
Oh yeah, lots more bugs.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah,
so good stuff this morning.
nice. Next. next assignment. We're gonna stick with this. High noon.
High noon.
I like high noon. This one's actually sounds fun to me. I want to see what people
harsh
do with this one.
Harsh shadows.
Yeah. Like, what can you do when you can't do anything?
Right. Know? Get out there.
Go all Helmut Newton on it and figure out how to use the
Newton,
hard light.
Go take a look at Renzi Ruiz yeah. for some inspiration. He does some fantastic work with really just killing the shadows. Expose for the highlights. Let the shadows go to black.
Yep. We're going to, I'll put this in the show notes. Assignment high noon. Perfect. See what I did there? I said perfect.
I do. I see what you said there. Okay. So photographer of the week, this is somebody that you've got a little story behind.
So yeah. So I, photographer of the week this week, Lynn Gilbert, whose work I did not know previous to this. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for, I think it was in the Wikipedia entry for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, had this picture of her when she was young.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, not she, Lynn Gilbert.
Well, yeah, I don't. Let's see when Lynn Gilbert was born. I didn't catch that part. She's 84. She's born in 33. So when Lynn Gilbert was in her 40s,
mm-hmm.
when, you know...
So we'll follow the link in the show notes. Illustrious
1977
women
is the same time that you were in your 40s.
Right. I was just thinking about retiring.
But yeah, so there's a, she in the 1970s, she took a series of pictures of, what would you say it was called, Illustrious Women?
Yeah, Illustrious Women.
Where
that Susan Sontag picture is beautiful.
Yeah, where she shot these really lovely portraits of famous, you know, of Barbara Walters and Susan Sontag and Sylvia Porter and, you know, Margaret yeah. Mead and like all these
Julia
really,
Child.
Yeah. These like serious heavies, including at the time, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's wearing this cool, I can only imagine that it was like orange or yellow, right? Polka dot sort of dress where she's got, and she's got her hands in this sort of waistcoat dress that I just think she looks really cool. And it's just, you know, sometimes you forget the other day, I guess it was yesterday. Heiser put up a picture of Dan Winters Young. Have you ever seen him? Young Dan Winters?
Is it the one where he's like looking at the negatives?
No, he's actually standing outside. He almost looks like a military guy. Like, I mean, he's, you know, because he was quite thin. This is, okay, so here's, I'll put a link in the show notes here. Let me add that. And here, I'll give it to you, Jeffrey. I'm going to stick it in the show notes here for just so we can... This is neither here nor there. It's just a picture of young Dan Winters, but like he was like this, you know, thin guy with hair and the whole thing.
Yeah, that's the one where he's looking at the negatives.
That is the one looking at negatives. But the one I'm talking about, actually, he wasn't looking at negatives. He was just standing outside. He had glasses on. I think Heiser may have taken it like, you know, 30 years ago at the workshop. And it's just, you know, you see these people and you go, wow, that's nothing like what he looks like now. You know, I wouldn't even recognize him kind of thing.
Right, right.
And I think she is, Bader Ginsburg is a little bit like that, where she's this somewhat frail looking older woman, you know, who nowadays you think, oh my God. And then you look at her from 1970, you're like, oh, she was really beautiful, you know, and kind of sassy with her dress and whatever, you know. It's just, I like that kind of idea. And I like looking at this. Anyway, that led me to this series. And she's also done this amazing series. I think it's in Afghanistan called Silk Road. Do you see this other gallery?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
There are a few people, but mostly these interiors of buildings and stuff in Afghanistan.
Beautiful just color work.
Absolutely gorgeous places that she's shooting in. I just thought that this was stuff that I hadn't seen before that I thought was really lovely. So,
see, now it's funny to me that you would resonate with this work because this work wasn't created; it was seen.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about these is that, I mean, for the most part, you mean like the Afghan work. But I almost see these as I guess you could consider them photojournalism. I almost look at them more as like architectural still life kind of things. You know what I mean? Where it's,
Okay.
That's the way I don't see them as her walking around taking pictures. I more see it like, oh, look at that beautiful room. I'm going to go set up a tripod and you know what I mean? Like try to really lock this whole thing down.
Right.
I don't know that that's how she worked. There's something about them that I just think are really beautiful. Plus these locations are really nice.
Stunning.
Lynn Gilbert, photographer.
Is she still shooting? Was Silk Road the last project?
I think she's still shooting. And I think she's still alive as far as I know. And I think she's still shooting. She's in New York. I do believe. In fact, I wrote, she's still shooting. Yeah, she's here in New York, 212. Her last exhibit was 2015, was the Silk Road down in Roosevelt Library in San Antonio. So stuff's beautiful. Still moving around.
She's in the National Portrait Gallery here in DC.
Yeah, I was going to try
to... She's in the collection there.
I was going to try to get a hold of her if I could. I thought she'd be a nice, interesting
person. Look at that. Look at the photo. Look at her about page.
A picture of her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that with the hat and the scarf. I mean, look at that style.
I want a hat and a scarf.
Beautiful.
You, Jeffrey, well, I wonder if, you know, you and I, neither of us is particularly like crazy stylish, right? Like worried about that kind of stuff.
You think?
You're like, speak for yourself, Wadman. But do you think like if you knew somebody, if money wasn't an issue and you knew somebody who was good at that kind of stuff, do you think that you'd look good put together? Or do you think it wouldn't make a difference?
Yeah, I used to. I used to value clothing and you know a lot more than clothing has become utilitarian. I don't like thinking about it too much.
Yeah, me either.
But you know, I've got a pair of hard shoes and you know,
Yeah.
I've got a couple suits now.
You can gussy up if the need arises.
I can, you know.
Interesting.
So, you know, I am not opposed to fancying it, tarting it up, as it were, for date night.
Very nice. Tarting it up. You got anything else?
I think that's going to do it for us. Let's get you into a nap. You sound like you're hitting bottom.
I need sleep.
So podcast it on taking pictures. If you want to get a hold of us, Bill tweets at Bill Wadman or Wadman 365
on Instagram.
I'm at Jeffrey Sidoris. And
when's the book coming out? You got an ETA for the hardcover?
I'm hoping November. Okay. Is, you know, it's kind of out of
they can
our
print
hands.
That quickly.
They that's what they say.
All right,
that's what they say.
Interesting.
So I'm hoping mid November. Fingers are crossed. You know, if not, then December. But it's in the works. So
yeah,
please keep an eye out. Photography by the Letter, the print version. And now, gosh, that's so sweet that Dan said that. Now I want to reach out to him and say, hey, why don't we have another one? Well, let's talk again. It's been a while. Let's talk again, Dan Winters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so thank you for
passing that along.
I appreciate that.
All right. We'll see you next week, guys.
Yeah, go take some pictures. Be good to one another.
We're probably going to record late next week. So if you're expecting it on Tuesday, it won't be there.
Yeah. There's some scheduling things over the next few episodes, yeah. Actually.
We're not gonna miss any episodes, hopefully.
Yeah, they'll shift a little. Yeah.
All right.
But we're here for you, man. We're here for you.
We'll see you next week.
All right, get some sleep.
Bye.
See ya.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something. This way, say what you wanna say, though I know your words will lay me out, so I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have for too long, it's clear to me the this way, say what you wanna say, I know what you will say, will leave me out, but I